Gaming Uncensored is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.
Hey guys, what is up? Quick update for you. Here we are not here with a new show this week, but we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, we've got a couple of things to tide you over, and so let me give you some details on those really quick. First of all, on this particular podcast, you're gonna hear a couple of segments that we've had in the queue for quite a while. One from our boy Brigham on a motorcycle, which is quite entertaining, and then one from our boy Josh. Those will give you a little taste of what's been floating around in the segment world since it's been a little while since we've played a segment on the show. So I hope you enjoy those. They're both great, and we love both those guys a ton. The other thing I'll mention that's super cool that's available to you now is the video that we made when we were together a couple weeks ago of the new accessibility controller prototype. And so we're on accessibility controller 2.0. Lots of cool stuff happening with that. And so we did a video of just kind of overview of what that looks like, and then Jamie and I playing Toe Jam and Earl for a while of kind of stress testing the thing and figuring out what works, what doesn't work, giving some feedback, all that kind of stuff. So you can actually get that by going over to the Patreon page. You can go to gaminguncensored.com and click on that Patreon link to get over there, or just search for us on Patreon. This is actually free content on Patreon, and so it's posted on the Patreon page, but you don't have to be a current patron to see it. It'll just be available for you there on the page. And so go over, check that out. I hope you have a good time with that. And we're looking forward to a new official show. Lots of news to talk about with some game delays and new hardware, all kinds of stuff happening in the gaming world. So we'll be back with all of that very, very soon. But for right now, here is Brigham and Josh.
What's up, Jamie and Tommy? It's Brick up here on my motorcycle. I hope this comes out. This is actually my second attempt to record in this. I did a 30 minutes worth of recording, which I know that won't get played. Plus, I said shit that was so intensive. More or less, I needed to get the rage out. So I'm not sending that. It didn't actually even save. So the game industry, tired of it. Cutting it short, making it short and simple. Becoming so money focused with Epic Games, EA really screwing over the EA doing these multiple tiers of pre-orders, which is stupid. The dumbest thing I've ever heard. But it's a money gouge playing on the game. Oh man, I gotta wash my bike now. It's getting muddy. I'll tell you guys about it in a minute. But the way EA is doing this stuff, it's just how can it not be fraud? I don't know. You buy a game, you release it, yet you can't play it yet. It's just, this games as a service is stupid. Like, honestly, EA burned them to the ground. I don't care. It's just pathetic. And I don't mean that, like, as in, like, physically. I mean, like, financially. Get them out of here. They need to not exist. Get the developers out of there. They need to buy themselves out. Just separate from EA. I would rather have cancer than see EA keep going forever. And I am dead serious about that. So, let's get into some lighter stuff. I just wanted to really get that off. And then Epic Games launcher. And then developers such as Metro Exodus and Ubisoft only going there exclusively for some of their future games. It's pathetic. I can't stand it, man. Again, like, give me fucking cancer than this shit to continue on. Like, I'd rather have pancreatic brain cancer, a tumor the size of a fucking watermelon, than see this shit continuously. to be horrible to the game industry. Like, it's just the worst thing in the world. And if anyone who has had a relative or is going through cancer, I'm not meaning an offense. It's horrible. I know it's a bad thing. God damn, this industry is just total garbage now. Like, and this is why I'm tired of gaming. I can't do it no more. I only listen to Jamie and Tommy, you guys, because you guys are real people. You're not a part of a company, which I know you guys want the money to help do this for a living. But that's great. But you guys keep it real. You guys do it. In reality, you guys are real people. I know you guys are probably sell out if a big sponsor says, here's $1 million, play for a living, say what we want to say. Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But you guys are the only gaming podcast I listen to now. I used to listen to 7 of them. IGN has just become such fake people. Their reviews are purchased. They've been caught multiple times recently with Resident Evil 2. Lying about playing certain parts of the game. So, yeah, it's just unspeakable. It's a disgrace. So, my newest hobby I've been getting into the past year, I've been wanting to do this episode or this segment for a long time. And this is riding my motorcycles. And this, or my motorcycle. And recording a segment while doing so. I'm really hoping this comes out. If you hear a bunch of static, it's because, I'm sure you can hear my motor. But I hope you can. I'm sure you can hear the wind inside the helmet. It's a little windy. It's actually dreary and kind of a little mist, fog, high moisture in the air. Bike's getting wet, so I'm going to wash this baby off. Definitely tomorrow when I go ride. Because it's getting dirty from this ride. All the dirt on the ground, it's getting nasty. But motorcycles is really my new thing. Since April of last year, me and my brother, we went and got our motorcycle safety course certification, got our motorcycle license together. Great time. Highly recommend anyone who gets a motorcycle, take the safety foundation. It's well worth it. They teach you so much great knowledge. They teach you everything you need to know to be safe, to survive, what gear you need, what the levels of gear and the levels of gear, the safer they are, the better chance you have to surviving, the more expensive. Like, the helmet I have is a Bilt helmet, which is Cycle Gear, one of the big motorcycle product companies. Bilt is the helmet. It's only DOT certified. Well, the Department of Transportation hasn't upgraded their helmet requirements since the 80s. So pretty much if I wreck with this helmet, I'm actually probably going to die or have a brain injury, trauma. Because it has no actual real durability. Like, it slides on my helmet, on my head a little bit, even though it's a little snug. It has a little bit of maneuverability, so when my head goes down to the ground, if it does, it's going to move around and probably could snap my neck. That's DOT certification, by the way. What you really need to look for is ECE, I believe, and SNELL, and then also a MIPS cap on the internal. It keeps the helmet still, and all those certifications are required for, like, MotoGP, high-speed racing on motorcycles. Because they actually, you can survive a pretty severe crash. Not like 100 miles an hour or plus, but if you're at 60 miles an hour and your head goes to the ground, you have a good chance of survival, or at least if other organs and stuff are not interfered. Your head has a good chance of being okay. Not to say, oh, I got a bar stuck through my kidneys and a glass into my heart, and, well, my head's okay, I'll be okay. No, that's not it. But you get the point. DOT helmets are the bare minimum for the U.S. It's stupid. It just doesn't care. I got tar snakes. I gotta be careful with the wet ground and tar snakes. That you just slip. We might as well be riding on ice. Tar snakes are those little lines that people put the construction in the concrete to seal cracks, by the way. So another reason why motorcycles is my new hobby is the motorcycle industry is far less corporate. Although there is corporate, like Harley-Davidson is a big corporate. Oh, shit. Got an oil spot where I'm at. Someone's leaking oil because they can't take care of the goddamn cars. Now I gotta be careful because I don't know what's on my tire now. But the motorcycle industry, it's like a big family. They're all competitors, yes. They all have a little bit of lawsuits for copying, blah, 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 which kind of my motorcycle's part of one of them. And it's into the history of the 1800 cc, so I'm at 1300 right now. It's cubic centimeters, one of the bigger engines for a cruiser. Biggest is like on the Triumph Rocket 3, it's like a, oops, wrong way. It's like a 2200 cc's, massive motor. Torque and the amount of torque, hold on. The amount of torque that the Rocket 3 on idle in neutral has more torque than the hyper bikes, hyper sport bikes that you see on MotoGP going through the Isle of Man doing corners at over 200 some miles an hour. Well, actually more like 150 miles an hour. Yeah, that's how fast they do corners. Not like sharp corners, obviously, but big round corners. They fucking fly. If you haven't heard of Isle of Man, it's the only place in the world that has no speed limit. Ever. That's where a lot of the MotoGP racers love to go race, but it's also the most dangerous, one of the most recent guys, I can't forget his name. Also, but he had oil leak, and they didn't torque the bolt. They don't know what caused it, but he got oil in his back tire, slipped, was going triple digits, died. Big crash in the MotoGP community. It was pretty sad. I was pretty sad, too, when I heard it. I didn't watch the race. Unfortunately, I did look at the video of the crash. I don't know why people do it, but we all seem to do it. Guy rolls up his window when I come up next to him. My bike has a lot of stock exhaust. I'm sure you guys might be able to hear it, but especially when I'm letting into it, trying to get it accelerated. But the motorcycle industry is just a huge family. Like, some people don't do the motorcycle wave to other motorcycles, but they either made it see you or they have a weird hatred, but that's very uncommon, to be honest. People come with their own conclusion, but they don't know why they didn't wave. That's just a long story. If you haven't ridden motorcycles, you'll learn about it when you do, if you do. Okay, I had to get past the stoplight. I'm riding a 2010 Honda Interstate. It's my second bike. My first bike was a 81 VT 1300, by the way, is the Honda Interstate, 1300 cc's. It's a cruiser, a little bit of muscle, lots of torque, which cruisers are known for. They're very high torque. It'll snap. You can snap your neck off if you're not careful. Nah, not really. You know what I mean. My first bike I rebuilt was an 81 Honda CX500 when I got my license. Bought a 700, put about 1300 or total with the cost of the bike of 700. It was 1300 grand total was put into it. I rebuilt the carburetors. Replaced the tires, air filter, replaced the air intake system, cleaned the carburetors, which is rebuilt part of rebuilding, by the way. Tires, air filter, air intake. I had to replace the fork seals. Those were busted open, so there was no, they weren't able, and the forks, there's oil, by the way. Some people don't realize there's actually oil inside the forks on the motorcycles. It's the lubricant, essentially. But the fork seals bust, you get oil all over. So if you ever see a motorcycle with oil all the way down the fork seal, the forks, either they haven't fixed it or they're just broken. Oil is seeping out from every little bump. I did that, loved it, rode it from May 4th was when I first got my first ride. Me and my brother, we did our first ride, we built his motorcycle. We had an 85 Sabre, Honda Sabre, I believe it was. We built his, we went on our first ride on May 4th. On Black Friday, I went and bought out this Honda, and he's had surgery recently, and he had to get rid of his other Honda Sabre that we built because of financial with him and his family. But I gave him my old motorcycle for free, so I was pretty happy about that, and I got this motorcycle. Right now it's dark, it's dreary, it's raining outside, kind of cool, it's 50 degrees, it's not bad. Wind chill at 40 miles an hour, 50 degrees is probably like 30 something. I'm pretty good, fine with that, it's not that bad. I got my hoodie on, some mechanic gloves, which won't do absolutely nothing for protection. We got my helmet, obviously you can probably hear. Really hoping this turns out. But I love motorcycles, this is the best therapy. I literally have a key tag on my motorcycle keys that says my therapist, because there's nothing more relaxing than just cruising through the city, whether you're going on the highway or just stop and go, whatever. Just something about the motorcycle, the rumble, everything, just the open street, it's just relaxing, and you get some twisties going, the curvy roads. It's just a whole new meeting to seeing the world. And this August, I plan on doing a big road trip to Ohio with this motorcycle. I want to get some luggage to strap it down, put some put some gear in, clothes and so on. And then I'm also going to go to the Tail of the Dragon in Tennessee, which is in 11 miles, has over 390 turns. It's also the most dangerous and deadly highway in the U.S. for motorcycles. The speed limit's only 30. There's a lot of sport bikes that go through there around 60 miles an hour, except for the hairpin turns, the U-turns, etc. But it's one of the most deadly deadly roads in the U.S. for motorcycles. But I'm going to ride it because it's the twisties. There's something about hearing the rumble across going on the hillside where you're on these big turns and stuff. It's just, and you're just weaving back and forth. It's just, it's pretty fucking amazing. There's a reason why bikers like to do a lot of turns and go through the windy roads. It's just, it's paradise. It's unexplainable until you ride. And no one will ever understand, like, oh, I have someone that rides and they tell me this and this, it's dangerous. Like, fuck you if it's dangerous. Yeah, there is a danger to it, but it's the biker's responsibility to be aware at all times. Like, I'm constantly turning my head, looking where things are at. Even though I got a very wide view, I just make sure I get eyes on. Keep an eye where cars are going. If they're starting to swerve, get closer to the lane, then maybe they're going to swerve over or they're texting and driving. I keep an eye out. Part of safe driving, safety course, they teach you all this shit, looking way ahead. You can see over a lot of cars when you're on a motorcycle, even on cruisers. I have a friend that died, I'm like, so what? What's your point? He got in a wreck, it sucks, I feel bad for you, and I feel for your loss. But it's either his fault or it was the driver's fault, and most of the time it is the car's fault. But he could have been preventative, and maybe, or he couldn't have. There's all kinds of different situations, but that doesn't mean that everyone's going to die. I have friends that have been riding for over 50 years, or more relatives than friends. Friends who are relatives. You know what I'm talking about. I know people who have been riding for over 50 years in this club, motorcycle club I'm in. BACA, Bikers Against Child Abuse. Went ahead and joined one of those, do something that's bigger than me, ride for some good reason. And they have never laid their bike once, they never been in a wreck, never got injured, and they were still riding with full gear. But, turn yet. And they're perfectly fine. Yes, people die. Yes, people do die in all motorcycles. You know what? They fucking die in cars too. Parental advisory, by the way. defeats the purpose, but don't care. People die in cars far more than motorcycles. You can get T-boned in a car and die just as easily as you can in a motorcycle. Yeah, you have a higher chance of dying in a motorcycle, a higher chance of surviving in a car, but you can still do it. So, people try to do the scare tactics. Anyway, sorry I went on a little tangent. That's why I'm recording, because I did nothing but a tangent for 30 minutes. But unless you ride, you'll never know what it's like. It's just by far one of the greatest experiences you can ever have in life. I don't care about someone else's their marriage. I don't care about you win the lottery. I don't care about what you think is the best. And same can go, you don't care if I ride motorcycles. But let me just say, if you do ride a motorcycle, you'll actually get to experience something you'll never be able to experience. Like, it's just the best. So, hope you guys enjoyed. Deuces. Sorry if I got a little offensive. Talk to you later.
Hello, Jamie and Tommy, and Gaming Uncensored listeners. This is Josh here with a segment on Linux gaming. So, what is Linux gaming? So, this segment was inspired quite some time back. I think it was at least a year or two ago, when Jamie mentioned during a podcast that he was interested in trying out SteamOS. He put it out there for some feedback from Gaming Uncensored listeners, so it is a little bit delayed, but here is my feedback. Like many Gaming Uncensored listeners, I am primarily a PC gamer. I also have a PS4 for many of the console exclusives, but my go-to platform has always been and will probably continue to be a PC. The only difference is, instead of using Windows, like the majority of PC gamers, my OS of choice is Linux. So this segment won't be a discussion about Linux versus Windows as a gaming platform. There's lots of conversations online about that already. Instead, I thought I'd use this as a way to outline the ways that Linux is a viable and, frankly, great gaming platform. giving some examples along the way. So maybe there are some people out there that have been thinking about it and thought of giving it a try. So hopefully this will be of interest to you. So with a little bit of background, Linux gaming, even commercial gaming, has been around almost as long as Linux itself. There have been dozens of companies over the years that have released native versions of titles for Linux, as well as providing ports of Windows games to the Linux platform as well. In recent years, though, it's really been Valve who has been one of the biggest players in the industry, really pushing hard and investing in technologies to improve the state of Linux gaming, as evidenced primarily by their SteamOS operating system. So SteamOS is Valve's customized version of Linux based on Debian Linux, and effectively it allows you to create a console-like environment. When you boot up the system, it boots up in a non-interactive manner and places you into effectively Steam Big Picture mode. It's primarily designed for use as a console replacement type user experience with a controller, but you can also use it with a keyboard and mouse without problem as well. It comes bundled with a number of customizations to allow effectively a plug-and-play gaming environment. That said, personally, I use Ubuntu Linux for my gaming PCs, primarily as it is the most common flavor of Linux in use, and therefore has the most support amongst many of the games released. So some of the good things about using Linux as a gaming operating system is that you gain access to a much better way of managing all of your software. And Linux uses a system known as package management, and all the software that is installed on the system uses the package management system, and it makes it really easy to update software every time an updated piece of software comes in. You'll get notified of it, and you can choose to install the packages. This is in contrast to Windows, whereby, generally speaking, most of the software is installed standalone, and you have to update it piecemeal, one by one. There's also much less operating system bloat. The Linux operating system is incredibly lightweight and uses very little resources, CPU, memory, which means that there's more of those resources available for the game that you're running. Driver management as well is also incredibly easy on Linux, particularly if you're using AMD hardware. AMD has invested a lot of time, a lot of money and effort into their Linux driver program. Their main driver is completely open source and is now completely integrated into the Linux kernel. So pretty much any AMD GPU or APU released in the last 5 years at least is completely plug and play. Nothing installed, the drivers will automatically detect the hardware and you're ready to go as soon as you boot up your system. It's a little bit different for NVIDIA. There is an open source driver, but NVIDIA isn't really investing in open source technologies for the most part. And so if you have NVIDIA hardware, the gaming experience is still great, but you'll have to install the NVIDIA proprietary driver. But again, for most distributions, this is a really simple process. Just adding a third-party repository, installing the driver, and then should be good to go. Some of the negatives, though, is that the game library is lower. There's no denying that as the majority of gamers are on Windows, the majority of games get released on Windows. This has been improving greatly in Linux's favor over the last few years, especially since Valve has now officially supported Linux since 2012 was their first release. And so the number of Linux games released has just been increasing and increasing each year. So I feel like the other negative which Linux has going for it is just the fear of the unknown. Many people I talk to, they may not necessarily be a fond of the way that Windows operates, but they're a little bit off-put by Linux because it feels completely foreign to them, and it does have a bit of a reputation as having a high barrier to entry. In recent years, the usability has improved greatly, particularly if you're using something like Ubuntu. You don't have to worry about using the command line or doing any low-level stuff. It's really, really low barrier to entry. But again, I feel like one of the biggest things people don't like is if they're used to Windows, they've built up their muscle memory, and when they get thrown something completely new, most people, and myself included, you just don't like the feeling of being thrown back to first grade. There are a number of myths as well, which currently exist surrounding Linux as a gaming environment. Probably primarily would be the fact that it has poor hardware support. Maybe historically, back in the early days, yes, the hardware support and the device drivers weren't as numerous for Linux compared to Windows. But in modern times, the amount of work that has gone into it has really improved that situation to the point where I'd probably argue that hardware and driver support is easier on Linux than it is on Windows. Because of its open source and community nature, it's really easy for people to write new drivers and contribute them. For example, the DualShock controllers, both the DualShock 3 and DualShock 4, they both had Linux support quite a long time before Windows had native support for those drivers, which really improves the usability. So you don't have to worry about, you know, doing a search for the drivers and then going to the website and getting a program and then installing it and trying around. Literally, if you had an updated Linux system, you plugged your controller into a USB port and it worked. And some other really cool things have happened in the graphics card space as well, particularly with the AMD side. As I mentioned previously, AMD has invested a lot of money into their open source drivers, and it's really starting to show. Just recently, there was the brand new Radeon 7 graphics card release, and there was quite some mixed reviews from people on the Windows side of things, both in performance and in driver quality. But on the contrary, the launch on Linux was absolutely perfect. We could see the commits ahead of time that AMD put into the Linux kernel to make sure everything was ready to go. And on day one, plugged in the Radeon 7, everything worked perfectly, and the performance was actually really, really great. We've also had some other cool things, such as enabling features in older hardware that it didn't ship with. So, for example, if you have a Radeon HD 6900 series graphics card, which, okay, it's a little bit old now, but there's still plenty of people running hardware of that era. That released with OpenGL, I think it was like 4.3 support, and then a update to the AMD graphics stack in the last year or so actually brought that card up to OpenGL 4.5, which allows it to play all current modern games on Linux. You note that most games on Linux are now moving over to the Vulkan API, which is a much more low level and much more powerful solution. However, it's good to know that if you've got old hardware, it does tend to receive support much longer on Linux than it does on Windows. Now, the big thing, though, is the games themselves. So I'm just going to pull up my Steam library here and just give some examples of the titles that are available. So I'm just taking a look at my Steam library now, and I've had this Steam account since about 2007. Now, in total, I've got 261 games in my Steam account. And of those, 154 are playable with native Linux versions. So about 60% of my library has native Linux versions available. And that number's been increasing year on year, pretty much, particularly with Valve's investment in the platform. And sure, you know, a lot of them are indie games and from a lot smaller studios and a lot simpler games. But it's not limited to indies only. We still have AAA games and whatever the level below AAA games are. We still have a lot of really cool PC releases. So just an example from my library. So all of Valve's titles, Portal 1 and 2, Half-Life 1 and 2 and expansions, Left 4 Dead 2, which includes Left 4 Dead 1 content, Counter-Strike, Source and Counter-Strike Go, Dota 2 and Artifact. And since the 2012 launch of Steam on Linux, all of Valve's titles support Linux at launch. I've also got Metro 23 and Metro Last Light, native versions, a lot of the Codemasters racing games, Grid Autosport, Dirt Rally and Dirt 4. There's a little bit of a delay with those due to the porting by an external company, but they eventually get there. We've got Rocket League, Deus Ex Mankind Divided, which I should note isn't the best port. It doesn't perform particularly well, just the way in which it was ported over, but I thought I'd throw it in there just as an example. Neverwinter Nights, The Witcher 2, XCOM 1 and 2, all got native versions. And then some other games as well, which probably aren't quite AAA, but still really big, fun titles. A lot of the Paradox Interactive games, so City Skylines and Stellaris. Also Dreamfall Chapters, and the recently released Ruina as well has a native Linux version. Even with the native version, it's probably still not enough to make it a completely competitive platform with Windows. One of the biggest things which happened only just a couple of months ago now is that Valve added some functionality to Steam known as Proton. So some technical details is Proton is based on Wine and DXVK. Effectively, these are a compatibility layer which allow you to play Windows games on Linux. So one of the ways they do that as far as graphics go is they convert the DirectX calls into OpenGL or now into Vulkan calls. So you get performance which is actually quite comparable with the Windows version of the game. It varies from title to title, but most of them are actually performing quite well. At the moment, not every game is supported, but the list is growing day by day, basically, as they improve the quality of the software. Just some examples, just recently, since Proton's been released, I've been playing both The Witcher 3 and Elite Dangerous on my Linux gaming PCs, and they have been running perfectly. No complaints at all, frame rates are really good, and multiplayer works fine, particularly with Elite Dangerous. It's been really great to be able to go back to those games again. On the competitive side of things, Overwatch is known to run really well. If we're talking about current popular games, Apex Legends is known to run basically perfectly. Frame rate's perfect, everything runs as it does on Windows. So the problem there is that the anti-cheat system that's used on Apex Legends blacklists Linux if it detects that that's running. Not because it deteriorates the quality of the anti-cheat, just because they put a blanket ban on that. To the point where Valve is actually in discussions with EAC, Easy Anti-Cheat, to get them to whitelist the game, because it appears that everything else runs perfectly. And so, what is the future of gaming on Linux? So, where does the future lie for Linux gaming? There's no denying the fact that Windows is vastly more popular than Linux when it comes to PC gaming. I think the latest numbers, it's anywhere from 2-4% of gamers are on Linux compared to 90%+ on Windows, and then the remainder on Mac. But it's a bit of a chicken and egg problem. Most people say the primary reason they won't switch to Linux is because there's lack of games, and then the developers and publishers will say they won't port games to Linux because there's not enough players. So it really needs a critical mass for it to really establish itself as a serious contender. So, on that note, I actually encourage any of you who have a curiosity to give it a try. You don't have to wipe your Windows partition. Pretty much every Linux installer supports dual booting with Windows. When you go to install, it will detect your Windows installation and install Linux alongside it. So when you boot up your system, it will show you a nice little menu and say, do you want to boot up to Windows or do you want to boot up to Linux? And doubly so, January of 2020, next year, we have the Windows 7 end of life approaching. So I think it's a perfect opportunity for lots of people to give gaming on Linux a try. So that has been my overview of my experiences gaming on Linux, and I encourage many of you to give it a try. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Thanks, and catch you guys later.
Would you like to submit a segment for the show? Send it to gamingandcensored@gmail.com. And don't worry, we'll play just about anything. Gaming Uncensored.